You're listening to KPMG Houston Trend Talks, a podcast series featuring KPMG partner Joshua Galvan, probing KPMG sector leaders on today's critical business issues.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for tuning in for another episode of the Houston Trend Talks podcast. I'm Josh Galvan, a KPMG partner based in Houston, and I'm excited to be hosting a discussion today on the amazing world of artificial intelligence, or AI. I have two lead KPMG partners joining me for the discussion, Anu Puvvada, who runs KPMG Studio, and Jason Howard Grau, a cybersecurity principal in the firm. Together, we're going on a tour of where AI is and how it is evolving in industry, how companies are using it, or how they're approaching using it for potential benefits to the business. AI is arguably the most talked about technology development in recent times, referring to the sophisticated way in which AI solutions use data, algorithms, to create new and original content. AI, as we all have seen and heard, is gaining much traction, both in the business world and in our personal lives. And in the business world, particularly for its potential to improve and transform business decision-making, business execution, and of course, business results. With Anu and Jason's help today, we get to explore the areas of AI solutioning, cybersecurity, and operations. So I hope you're ready. It's going to be interesting. So we're going to go ahead and make a start then by hearing from Anu on the areas of experimentation and implementation of AI. Anu, tell us about some of the areas where AI is being implemented and the partnerships that companies are forging to leverage its potential, if you could, to get us kicked off here.
Thank you, Josh. It's nice being here today. Well, there's definitely been an AI revolution taking place. PitchBook had nearly 700 AI startups created in the last 5 years. If that's not a revolution, I don't know what is. The buzzword right now is definitely generative AI, but it's important to remember there's many different forms of AI out there. There's machine learning, natural language processing, and generative AI. And companies will need to pull together all different types of technology to activate their entire workflow using artificial intelligence. When I think about AI, I really think about it as a stack. There's applications that are built on the AI layer. So ones that integrate into a company's main business model. And these are really applications that have emerged to be point solutions that fit certain problems or needs in a certain area. So a big one right now is marketing and content creation, because that's one of the main use cases for generative AI. We're seeing quite a bit of market movement in this area. There's companies like Character AI, Writer, Jasper, really solving for the marketing function. Another area is legal. We're seeing companies like Casetext and PatentPal, ones that really help the legal function operate better and faster. So those are really applications that are point-specific function-specific solutions. There's also areas like Midjourney, which is another company that makes imagery that fits any industry or function. And then the next way I think about it is in the stack are large language models, which many of these apps are built on. So that's what we know as OpenAI's ChatGPT, Anthropic's Claude, Google's Palm, Stability. And depending on how these large language models are trained, they can give different answers. So for example, Claude is built on constitutional AI. Inflection's built with emotional intelligence. So how those pair with the use case is important. And then you have infrastructure companies. So those are the software and the hardware companies that really are the compute of AI. So the Amazons, the Microsofts, the Googles, the NVIDIAs. Compute's going to be a challenge coming forward, and we're already seeing it emerge. There's definitely not enough compute in the world right now for all of the use that's emerging. And the last area I would say is, you know, we've been living kind of the last decade where companies have been collecting all of this data, but very few have really viable business models or revenue from capitalizing on that data. And what's powerful about generative AI is really the ability to be able to leverage an already trained model and be able to accelerate certain business outcomes. So the question that companies should really be asking themselves is, how does this allow my organization to optimize my business? And how do I use this to create new businesses for my company?
Wow. Thanks, Anu. It's really awesome to be, you know, hearing this from you and imagining the potential transformative impact AI could bring to companies. In fact, the impact it is bringing to companies. And what's interesting about it to me is, as I hear you speaking, there's an entirely new vernacular for all of us to learn in not just technology, not just technology, you know, enabled business processes, but maybe business entirely. And what's interesting about that vernacular to me, at least, as I'm hearing you use some words, is not surprisingly, a lot of that vernacular is human-like. You talked about emotional, you talked about constitutional, you talked about some other things as it relates AI solutions or AI purposes. And I guess, given it is artificial intelligence is what AI stands for, that vernacular would reasonably verge on the human. So it's really, really interesting to me. And I'm aware through a number of my discussions with my clients that, you know, a lot of these well-known big tech outfits, like you mentioned, are right in the middle of all these collaborations. You talked about compute power and a shortage, and frankly, what I understand to be a long line of people in waiting to get their access to machines to do some of the engineering, the experimentation, and working on their own solutions. In your view, then, kind of responding to that, are there any standout examples or really good success stories on how partnering actually can be, you know, best engaged or executed to actually produce a solid AI outcome? And what does that model look like, that partnership model, if you will?
I think it really depends on the situation. Right now, we're seeing big players emerge, we're seeing startups emerge, and we're seeing companies make their own solutions using their own differentiated data. And I think whatever partnership a company goes into depends on which way they go. Companies should really think about taking a two-pronged approach here. The first is really around digital transformation and reimagining ways of working for themselves through AI adoption. And we're seeing companies, you know, play with the Microsofts, the Googles, the Amazons in the world, but we're also seeing them work really closely with startups in the space with those point solutions. And the second prong of this is really, how does a company use its own data corpus and its own differentiated data to create new forms of revenue for themselves? And I think it's important to focus on both areas equally. And then the partner arrangements that come out of those is going to depend on, you know, is it the first or is it the second? We're definitely seeing companies race towards implementing Gen AI and taking an IT-based approach. And I think it's really important to get this into the hands of people to see the use cases that emerge out of it. But the people and change management aspect of it is critical. At KPMG, pretty much everyone has access to be able to use generative AI. We're working with many startups in the space as well and implementing it into our operations, but also going to market with these companies. So when we deploy generative AI at our company, we put certain guardrails on it and wanted to ensure that people would really optimize the use in their day-to-day job. But it's also important to give people the right training and critical thinking skills to ask the right prompts and questions from this technology that's emerged. And the question to really ask is, how do we get humans and AI to work together? And what does that model look like to amplify value, not just for the employer, but also for the employee? The partnerships that companies make, whether that's with a big provider or with a startup, it's going to be critical to make sure that people component is there too.
Yeah, there's so much to consider. And, you know, one thing that I think you're suggesting without saying directly is that AI is here to stay. This isn't technology innovation du jour and something companies and individuals are just tinkering with. It really is maybe the latest ultimate combination of existing digital or emerging technology building blocks that so far we haven't fully been able to capitalize on. And now with AI, we can do that. You talked about large language models, you talked about automation and some other things. And I believe, I'm assuming you agree, that it's here to stay. And we're not just playing around. We're actually coming up with real business solutions that are going to stick. So that's exciting. Jason, I want to kind of switch gears a little bit. We get to talk about something that maybe is a little closer to my area of practice on a day-to-day basis and what I think is a very interesting part of the AI discussion as a whole. As with any other technology innovation, there's always this kind of creeping suspicion of risk. And in the wide array of risks out there, There's things like data confidentiality, privacy, cybersecurity, you know, theft, and on and on. And in your area, as a professional with many years of experience in cybersecurity, what should we expect from the kind of the core strategies companies are implementing around how to protect AI? How can companies build kind of the countermeasures to go against these risks that present themselves, some of which we know about, some of which are still kind of manifesting as new types of risks as a result of the new types of technology innovations we're seeing from AI? Any thoughts on that, Jason?
Josh, thanks very much. Great to be here. It's fun to be on the cybersecurity end of AI right now. I think in part and parcel, I'm going to start with a preamble, if you're okay with that, just kind of taking it back a step. Because one of the things that cybersecurity professionals are used to is being part of the conversation and the dialogue as things are developing. So as technologies develop, as the way that we are growing our strategies as businesses, and Anu talked about this a lot, around the disruptive potential that AI has. And what we're starting with to a degree is Industry 4.0 on steroids. So if you think about it, and you know, follow the analogy, I do this with a lot of clients from a conversational standpoint. You know, if you think Industry 1.0 was very much kind of hand to machine, it was the aggregate, the agrarian farming approach. Then we moved into kind of 2.0, which was the initial infrastructure technological, the development of railways and telegraphs and the structure of communications. Then 3.0 came along as a digital revolution. And that was very much in the 1970s. And now Industry 4.0 on steroids is basically being driven through the opportunity that AI gives us. Why is that important? It's because of the velocity of change. So one of the things that cybersecurity professionals are starting to see is, how do we secure something that has such a rapid response to it? And what we're starting with, and it's something that Anu kind of tied on, when you think about the development of AI, the development of AI, if you break it all the way down, as incredibly complex and clever and agile as it is, it's effectively the development of software. It's the development of software and the collaboration of knowledge. And what we're tending to see right now is kind of two key areas where security is getting into the conversation, ensuring that we're able to have a conversation around what do we do with this technology and how do we do it. So when we start thinking about how we secure it, it's about making sure that the software development lifecycle that incorporates AI is correct. It's ensuring that we don't have a SolarWinds or a MOVEit, which are inherently part of the equation, or we reduce the risk of them happening because there's always the potential. And you also touched on this, that there's a range of different players in this. It's incredibly rapidly evolving. 700 or so new organizations exist and have suddenly sprung up in the last couple of years. Understanding the diligence of your supply chain. If you think about, you have a large company, maybe an oil and gas company, maybe a chemical company, maybe a power and utilities, maybe a luxury fashion organization. If they're reliant on a startup to build their AI model that they're going to use for logistics, operational integration, and planning with retail, for example, you need to understand that organization and you need to understand how that security is going to evolve. So pushing the security down into the supply chain is crucially important. And let's not forget also that nation states are really concerned about how rapidly AI is evolving and the potential for misuse. So having good cybersecurity strategy in place at the get-go helps assuage some of that concern. Just a couple of thoughts, Josh, to get started.
Oh, that's fantastic, Jason. And clearly, you know, the innovation, implementation, operation of AI solutions is challenging not just technology, but other functions in the business. And that includes external parties and partnerships to evolve, to upskill, to rethink. And I think as it relates to cybersecurity and risk in general, that means, if you will, demanding a seat at the table and an integration with the teams developing and implementing and operating those solutions so that considerations around cyber, on top of things like legal ethics, compliance, enterprise risk, and third-party risk are all considered right from the start. So thanks for sharing that, Jason. Really appreciate your insight, as always. Just quickly, turning our attention to one final topic, and it's really the operational aspects of AI solutions. This, I suppose, is kind of where the rubber hits the road, as it were, on actually producing a business impact, a business outcome, or changing the way in which business is conducted, and that doing that through AI solutions. Anu, if you don't mind, can you talk a little bit about how you are seeing companies are or will be kind of working with their partners to run and care and feed for AI solutions over time? I say this and ask this question this way because over the last 8 or 10 years, we can think about a lot of emerging technology, digital solutions, a lot of which were rather democratized and citizen developed and lightweight, some of them having very clear, very short shelf lives. And so I'm curious about that aspect, among others, as it relates to the operations of AI solutions, putting them in, running them, replacing them, enhancing them, getting rid of them. Kind of what is that life cycle looking like? Can we even anticipate that yet?
There's definitely many considerations here, Josh. I just remember 5 years ago when I was working on implementing AI, training was just very costly. It's very people-based, almost cost prohibitive. The technology just wasn't advanced enough at that time to be able to just take it across entire workflows. And, you know, generative AI has been in development for the last decade. And what's really changed is that it's easier to get into the hands of employees. You know, you have this already trained model that you can leverage almost instantaneously. Definitely stage one is around, you know, implementing generative AI in the company. And it's important to know that it's a major digital transformation project. It breaks down across people, process, and the technology itself and all the implications that come with those, right? And the operational aspects that come with that. But when I think about it, I think of stage one as just implementing already existing large language models and using them in certain use cases and letting people, you know, be able to use it to draft emails and, you know, basic things that they do every day. Stage two is around taking the differentiated data and knowledge of a company and basically incorporating that into the artificial intelligence. And that requires a company to really have their data in order, understanding the pipelines of data that they have, what is the data that they have, and how can they leverage it to create differentiated outcomes in the market. You also have to think about the people side of it. Do you have the right change management in place? I see a lot of these type of technology initiatives, as you noted, Josh, they die on the vine, right? Because people are not adopting them. So you really have to think about that. How do you train your people to optimize and draw the best answers from this models? Because it's very conversational. So it's important that people are asking the right questions, asking them the right way, being trained on how to do things. Like my team right now, we're using something called super prompting in order to draw the best knowledge out of these models. It's really an investigative questioning technique. And many times that is not incorporated into training for many companies. And that's one of the main things that as they interact with these models, it's very important to know. But all of this technology is really transforming the way that we work. And one of the things that's been kind of top of mind for me and what I've been thinking about is a new form of intellectual property has emerged from this. And that form is really how people think and apply that thinking in the context of their organizational process and culture. And that's where differentiated knowledge-based intellectual property lives. And so companies need to be thinking about how do they capture and protect that knowledge, right? And it's different than, you know, knowledge that sits in a PowerPoint presentation. It's the how of the knowledge. And that's emerging out of this. And it's important to capture prompts and be able to harness the best ones so that you can take your company to the next level. There's obviously the responsible AI part of it, ensuring that you have the right governance and guardrails, making sure that you're mitigating hallucinations, bias in response, threat actors on the models. But, and also, I talked about it earlier, training people. It's easy to just rely on the answer that comes out of a large language model. But it's important to remember that it's a prediction engine, right? It's not thinking. It's not reasoning. The humans do that piece of it. And so we have to train humans in the loop to ensure that they are actually doing that piece and being critical about the information that's coming out. So it's a very holistic digital transformation project, and change management is really at the core of it.
so much to unpack there, and I know we're limited on time, but I really appreciate the highlights, Anu. And Jason, she, at the very end there, talked about a few things that I know are right in your area of the world, cyber, information protection. We talked about a number of things there. Any views from you as it relates the cyber operations of AI operations, as it were?
Yeah, I mean, we're already starting to see it's you create a technology, it can be used for good or ill. And we're already starting to see from a cyber response and recovery perspective, misuse of AI. We're seeing AI-based attacks. We know that threat actors are learning how to apply AI models to their own ingenuity and research to actually drive increased cyber attacks. So that's one aspect that's kind of interesting. And you touched on something which I think is really important. It's the data that is becoming more relevant to how we operationalize. And AI consumes a huge amount of data. The securing that data, the confidentiality risk around that data, the lack of governance around AI, it's not a super cybersecurity response capability. It's not something that cyber operations per se worries about, but it's something that cyber professionals are really concerned about. Because if you think about it, you know, the last survey that I kind of touched on, I think was 11-12% of data inputted into ChatGPT is confidential. I had a client who contacted me recently who wanted to understand what strategy should they be putting in place to simply limit, and that was their first thought, let's limit people's ability to use ChatGPT because they're asking questions around intellectual property and critical engineering schematics were being uploaded into ChatGPT. You know, there are small instances of sensitive data leakage without that kind of coherent strategy that needs to be addressed. And I think the other part of it, which is just, we haven't got time to touch on it today, I don't think, but you know something is interesting when you see governments actively reacting to it rapidly. The EU AI Act is coming out. There are about 10 or 11 different legislations on the books or in process to provide framework and structure around AI because it's so rapidly evolving. The cyber component, and Josh, you touched on this at the beginning, cyber needs to be at the beginning of the conversation. It's not just the heuristic models and the implications for the organization from a how do we transform and change. There are also real life implications around things that we couldn't do 3 or 4 years ago that we could potentially use AI to do today. Integration between autonomous vehicles and local municipalities is something that's already being done. The question of whether or not the data that you're gathering, maintaining, and assuring as part of that integration, the models that are being used, wasn't considered when the design was put together. So there was an immediate potential leakage of, would you really want to know if you're driving from Houston to Galveston on I-45, that all the municipalities that you're driving through also happen to know that you're driving through them? And would you be confident that they are able to take appropriate measures to secure the information that relates to you in your vehicle? Because the funny thing is, vehicles are no longer cars on their own. They're entertainment platforms. They're work platforms. It's a very dramatic, rapid shift. So we're definitely having to think a little bit more holistically and shift left in the process, as I said, to ensure that cybersecurity is thought of at the get-go. Just because you can do something doesn't necessarily mean that you should do something. And if you think about the sheer scale of this, I was talking to two of the large infrastructure and data center providers recently. They are being tasked to provide colo-type data centers closer to decision-making processes for organizations, because latency is an issue in cloud. They are seeing the great journey that we had over the last, let's call it 10, 11 years to migrate to cloud and get rid of our own data centers and operate everything in individual clouds is actually not necessarily as effective as it needs to be. How do you secure that? So we're seeing across a range of operations the impacts. And the challenge is always the same. If you can think about it, plan for it, have an approach toward it, you are far more likely to be successful. Because if you think about it, strategy leads into design. Design leads into consideration of data architecture and infrastructure. Thinking about how you're going to model, what is this thing going to do? How is it going to do it? How do you test it? How do you ensure it's secure? And you touched on this a lot. There's an inherent potential risk of bias. We're seeing some of those activities already in some of the public AI solutions that are out there, where bad actors are looking to try and skew the models in their own direction. She made a great comment, which I 100% agree with, which is the reasoning and rational component of any AI is not the AI, it's the human being. But if you're relying on it to provide you with material for decision-making, Therein lies the challenge. Does that make sense?
That's great, Jason. Thank you so much. Guys, thank you both, Anu and Jason. I really appreciate your time today. I'm sure our listeners have also benefited tremendously from your insights. There's so much to talk about here. We could go on for hours. I won't be surprised if your email inboxes and cell phones and your LinkedIns and so on and so forth are already rattling. I really hope you have a chatbot or some other mechanism that's AI-enabled helping you manage it all. But you provided some meaningful insight. I know you're providing meaningful support and some strategic thinking as well as technical assistance to companies in their own journeys in AI. This wraps up today's Houston Trend Talks episode. I really appreciate everybody tuning in. I hope you'll listen to another edition of Houston Trend Talks coming off the wire soon. Connect with us on LinkedIn and other online KPMG resources if you choose. We look forward to seeing you next time. Thank you so much. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to Houston Trend Talks with KPMG. Be sure to subscribe to this series to hear the latest trends from Houston business leaders and receive notification of new episodes.